This is The After Party, live with Jim McAllister and John Daly.
Tuesday. It's the day to vote.
Super Tuesday.
And what you guys don't get to see is Kim brushing her hair in the moments before we go live.
It gets stringy and, like, you know, gotta brush this mop out before we go on.
It's majestic, really.
It's like my lion's mane.
It's like your mane. And speaking of Maine, we have a horse story in animal news.
It's my winter coat on this chilly, rainy day.
Your winter coat. A lot of times you're like, oh, didn't you see my shirt? And I'm like, no.
No,
I didn't see your shirt.
I'm like, I was wearing a gray shirt today. You're like, no, you were wearing your hair today.
You're wearing your hair. Yeah. Hello, everybody in the chat. Thanks for coming in. We appreciate it. Oh, look at this.
Pamela with the $5 super sticker.
Kirby, $5 super sticker. Thank you, guys.
Does Pamela live in Petaluma?
Pamela, do you live in Petaluma? I don't know.
I thought she seems like she's a neighbor to me, but I don't know.
You know what I've noticed? There are a lot of Pamelas in Petaluma. Petaluma Pamelas. That should be a group. My friend's mom is Pamela.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. My mom knows a few Pamelas. Hello, Mindy. Okay,
party
so
people. Yeah.
This lead story today.
Hello to you guys. Yeah.
Hello. Hi. I like that we're a little informal. Our lead story today, and this was chosen by a committee of two.
Parents, it's about robots.
Parents warned over a popular toy robot. Kim, you need to tell me what this is about.
So they have these robots, you know, and it's not just one, but it's many of them. And what they have is they look like a robot with a little smiley face and friendly, right? It looks innocuous enough. It looks harmless.
Tell me it's a mind control robot.
No. I will tell you that the reporters are looking at this thing going, it's kind of a hybrid between a smartphone, a tablet, and a smart speaker on wheels. This one, or one of them, has a large touch screen with a control center, apps, and an animated cartoon face. Many of them have a built-in microphone, a loudspeaker, and a wide-angle camera placed just above the screen. And because those features also have a connection to the internet, it can be hacked by bad actors.
Or it can track what your child wants from the store.
Oh, whatever it is.
When your child's old enough to talk.
So they think people that are, you know, out to do bad things can make a video call to the
Amazon,
robot.
Amazon, Facebook, Instagram.
Thieves and crooks and criminals. They can make a video call to the robot, hijack the parental account, even upload modified firmware or software to this thing. The first thing they say they found out during the research was that malicious actors could make video calls to any robot of this kind. A gullible system that it would let anyone with a robot ID retrieve lots of personal info from the server. Your IP address, your country of residence, your child's name, age, and gender, a lot of details of the parental account as well, including your email address, your phone number, and the code that links the parental app to the robot. And all of that opens the door for a big, old, bad, hazardous attack. A complete parental account hijack. And if that happens, it would cause the parents to lose all access to the robot. You'd have to try to recover it with tech support. Meanwhile, the attacker could have repeated the whole process all over again because all they needed was that robot ID, which wouldn't change.
So this is basically a digital Trojan horse that you're giving your child.
That's right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Let's
and you know
off.
What kids want? I'll tell you over and over again, I've been asked for a robot. I just want a robot. So
no
I have
Wi-Fi.
A couple of robots in my
no
house.
No Wi-Fi.
My robots, our robots in this house, are connected via remote control.
Are you talking
control.
About your kids or the toys?
The toy robots that my kids have.
No, you said robots, so I didn't know which ones you're
talking about. I don't have a real like robot that do my housework. That would be nice. Speaking
of
that's rich. Yeah, her name is Julia. No.
Just quickly, poor Pamela kid. Was in Santa Cruz. Not Petaluma.
Oh, okay. All right. I love Santa Cruz as well. Go SoCal High Knights. Woohoo. They notified the toys developer about all these vulnerabilities. So
they got right on it, right?
Say they got right on it. They say they fixed it.
Yeah, I bet they did.
So here's how they say you can stay safe if you're going to buy one of these robots. Listen to me, mama of three boys. You might need this. When you're shopping for one of these, read the user feedback and reviews. check out any security reports to avoid being spied on or eavesdropped on by your smart devices. Turn them off when you're not using them, and put some tape over the camera when you're not using them as well.
My robot reported me as a communist.
Oh my God. Finally, you should protect all of your family members' devices with a reliable security solution as well. So yeah, it looks fun. Might not be so fun.
Until the robot starts narking on you.
Yeah.
No, 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 no.
No, thank you.
I don't think you should have anything connected to the internet around your child, including cameras, because those people were hacking into the Ring cameras and talking to kids over the two-way talk feature.
Right.
Do not. I mean, this is, maybe I'm naive and maybe someday this is inevitable, but if I had a kid right now, I would not have anything internet connected around him or her.
Not even an iPad, a tablet?
How old is the kid? Not if they were super, super young.
I have a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old.
Okay, if they're old enough to use technology. I'm talking about like infants and toddlers. I wouldn't have anything with a camera on it or anything. No.
Yeah, they don't need that screen time anyway. But I will say that
they need to be old enough that I can teach them safety and security.
Petaluma City Schools does issue school-issued iPads to kids in kindergarten. And you keep them at school and you use them because it's a digital technical age we're living in. They have to figure out how to use this stuff. So
man,
they have.
Do you remember
like,
kindergarten? Kindergarten was like.
They have ABC like, mouse. They have like, you know.
It's like sitting on carpets and like.
Now you get your iPad
goose.
Time.
Yeah.
You get. And then in first grade, they have a math program they start using for addition, subtraction. By the time you get to fourth grade,
sounds like lazy teachers.
No, you're done. No, because it's not used that much.
Give them the iPad. Here, you have an iPad. Go in the corner. Leave me alone, you brat.
I don't think they use it that. It's not like your kid's on the iPad all day. There's targeted things that they're doing.
Sometimes when I say something, it's not serious. I'm just joking.
Yeah. No, I know. A lot of people. It's actually it's a sore subject with a lot of parents. Interestingly, because there are some parents who are like, no technology.
Yeah,
right?
I wouldn't want my kid like glued to a screen all day because that's what high school and college and professional life are for.
But I kind of subscribe to the thought that everything in moderation, you know, if it's educational in nature, we don't live in a vacuum. Our kids are, you know, these are 2024 children. They're going to grow up and they're going to be behind the eight ball if they don't at least know how to do basic things. So they need to know.
Well, yeah, they need to understand technology. I would have to think about like the fact that the iPad, maybe I would cover up the camera until a certain age. Or, but then you get the world's getting really complex because there's a microphone on there too.
Totally.
We live in a very disturbing world and with disturbing actors. We want to ask you if you, if
like
you're
Gwyneth
on the
Paltrow?
Podcast platforms, what's that?
Like Gwyneth Paltrow? I was kidding.
We were asked to remove her from the program. What was that from the planet? I'm not sure what the request was. If you're on one of the podcast platforms, please leave us a review and rate us. Apple Podcasts and Spotify are the big ones, or whatever platform you use. That will help bump up the visibility of the show. So we're trying to help grow the show and exploring all the different ways that we can do that.
Yes, so, please click the like button too. We really appreciate that. We lost our second oldest person in the world, who was Ms. Ciccarelli, Edie Ciccarelli in Willits. She passed away recently, right after her birthday. I think
right after
she was,
her parade.
Her parade, her big town celebration. She was 116 years old in 17 days. And that made her the second oldest person in the world. But she's not the oldest.
No, this is the world's oldest person who celebrated a 117th birthday.
Look at
and
her.
She lives in Spain, but there is a local connection. Do you know the local connection, Kim?
Yeah, she was born in San Francisco, right?
Yeah. Maria Brañas Morera is celebrating her 117th birthday in this was Monday in Spain. She was born March 4th, 1907.
Wow.
You just missed the earthquake.
That's what I was thinking. Just missed the earthquake.
Yeah, and lived in Catalonia, Spain, since she was 8 years old and has been residing at the same nursing home for the past 23 years.
Wow.
Wow, who's paying that bill?
Let's hope she had long-term care.
Hopefully
they have a better system there than they do in the
United
States.
I think the long-term care program is like your family.
Yeah.
We should talk about long-term care someday and what a scam it is and the experience we had with my father and not getting money out of them. She was named the oldest living person by Guinness, of course, Guinness World Records, in January of 2023, following the death of a French woman, Lucille Randon, who was 118. It's very competitive when you get up here, Kim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're always just waiting for that other bleep to die, right?
No, I want to be the oldest. No,
it's my
title
now.
Oldest. They don't care. I don't think any of these people care whether they're the oldest or not.
Funny.
Someone tells them that and they're like, oh, that's kind of cool. Happy birthday to me.
She's very grateful for all the congratulations she received and the interest that so many people have shown in her state of health. Check out this photo. This was like, I think I had a note in here. This is when she was 87 years old.
Oh, wow.
In 1994. So this is when I was a freshman in high school. She was 87.
That's crazy.
She's happy to be able to celebrate this special day intimately with her family and colleagues and wishes everybody a happy Monday. That's pretty cool. She remains active at her nursing home and maintains a social media presence on Twitter. Oh, I hope she's not a right winger. Wow. Good morning, world. I turned 117 years old. I've come this far, she wrote on Monday. She is currently the 12th oldest verified person in history and would rise to the number 5 spot if she makes it to her 118th birthday. Check
That's
out these other old photos.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And here she is when she was getting married.
Wow.
She was 23 years old. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
And I read in the story that her family left San Francisco because of a second wave of the bubonic plague.
Oh, wow.
And they went back to Spain and she didn't.
I didn't know we had the bubonic plague here.
Oh, we had everything here. We had a lot of syphilis, too. San Francisco. This is gold
rush.
We don't
mess around.
Yeah.
Did it say how many kids and grandkids she had?
It doesn't.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Strange.
Maybe she
usually they
any.
Say that, right? Usually yeah. That's in the stats.
That's so interesting. Well, good for her, and not so good for this next fellow. There's a Mervyn Block School of News Writing that says it's a book that all news people have, and it teaches you how to write news briefly and succinctly. The briefer you can make it, the better it is, especially when you're writing for broadcast. And what Mr. Block offers up as an example is a famous news broadcast where, and so I tried to write it like this in our show description, where it says something like, a man from Colorado was bitten by his Gila monster. He was 34, right? Mm-hmm. So you know without even me having to tell you that he died, right?
Oh, he was.
So, yeah. So that's how I wrote this one. This Colorado man died after do you say Gila or Gila? But it's a Gila monster.
I think everyone says Gila. I don't know if that's the proper pronunciation, but in the US people say Gila.
The crazy thing is you can actually keep one of these things as a pet. It is legal to own a Gila monster in most states. And you can find them at reptile shows, which there are always reptile shows going on, and breeders. They most of the time have an easygoing personality. However, they are venomous. And when they bite you, it's clearly a big deal. It's excruciating. Of course, the venom, right? So this man, 34-year-old Christopher Ward of Colorado, he is bitten by his pet Gila monster. And he dies. Arizona State University professor Dale DiNardo said of the lizard's bite, it's like getting your hand slammed, caught in a car door. Even that initial pain is extended for an hour. Then you get days of soreness, throbbing pain. It's worse than any bee, wasp, or scorpion. Why you would want to keep this as a pet, I do not know. This pet, his name is Winston. Winston bit down on Mr. Ward's hand without letting go. So Ward ends up getting this bite. He's vomiting. He can't breathe. Maybe allergic reaction to the venom? I don't know. He's put on life support, though, and just doesn't pull through. Dies less than 4 days after he's bitten by his pet Gila monster, Winston.
I have a correction. John was wrong, and you were right when you suggested Gila. It is Gila.
That's what I thought, Gila monster. I've heard it said both ways.
Oh, now that's what you thought?
I was unsure.
Okay. Well, I like to correct it. When I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And I'm
wrong.
It was
unclear.
When I'm wrong, I'm really wrong.
Ward's girlfriend told Animal Control that they bought Winston at a reptile exhibition in Denver in October, along with another Gila monster named Potato from a breeder in Arizona.
Gila monster sounds more ominous, actually.
Gila monster.
Gila monster.
Both of the Gila monsters that they had are now at a South Dakota reptile sanctuary. So she released them, right? Yeah. Oh, it is. It does say down far in the article, it is Gila monster. It's interesting that Winston was sold at a reptile show, and so he slipped through the cracks of state enforcement, because the Colorado Department of Natural Resource agents sometimes attend the shows to make sure illegal animals aren't for sale.
Oh, yeah. Sneaky, sneaky.
How much do you think it costs to get a pet Gila monster?
Ooh, it sounds like it's difficult to get one, like to obtain one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably like, is it like $1,000?
It's $1,200 and up. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
$1,200. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I figured it was something like one of the rare breeds of dog.
Yeah. Their natural habitat ranges from northwestern Mexico across Arizona into parts of California, Nevada, New Mexico, and Utah. They've got a declining population, which is a concern, often because of new construction and humans moving into their habitat. Gila monsters are not protected as a threatened or endangered species, though. Maine and Kentucky prohibit keeping them as pets. Other states like Montana, you don't
even
need...
Is that because they know how to stand up for themselves?
You don't even need a permit.
They're not worried about them?
I guess so. I don't know. Many states, though, are in between where you actually do need a permit, but you can't have them. In Colorado, yeah. You need a permit, but you can have it. So... Yeah, they live 20 years. They eat small rodents and quail eggs. They live in a little aquarium. 95% of their time in the wild is spent underground, interestingly.
I would stay away from the humans, too.
They're up to 22 inches long for their size. But they range over an area as big as 100 or more U.S. football fields in pursuit of prey, including bird egg nests and high up in cactuses. So that's why they conserve their energy by living mostly underground.
Very cool.
Yeah. And they,
Gila
before
monster.
They, before
I learned
they
something
bite
today.
You, they give a warning hiss. So he probably heard that hiss before he got crunched.
Archie does that too.
Yeah. Warning hiss.
Yeah.
Warning.
Do your kids do that?
No, I don't get a hiss. Mm-mm.
You get more of an eye roll.
Yeah, the eye roll, a sarcastic comment, you know. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You taught them well.
Thank you.
This is probably one of my favorite stories for the day. Animal rescuers discover a dog in dangerous ditch was actually a statue.
What?
Animal rescuers rushed to a park in England on a report of a dog stuck in a ditch, but when they arrived to find the supposed mud-covered canine, it was a realistic statue. The wildlife rescue said in a Facebook post that the water rescue volunteers were dispatched to Thorpe Park in the Cleethorpes Park beach area. You know where that
right.
is?
Right. Oh, absolutely.
After
I love
receiving
it
multiple reports of a dog stranded in a muddy ditch. While our volunteers deployed to the area, we discussed the case with volunteers at the Lost Pets and Center there about a plan and the location of the animal. The rescue team arrived to find the dirty dog was actually a statue that had already been rescued by an on-site member of staff. Thank you to those who have reported with good intent, and thank you to our water rescue volunteers for their immediate response on scene and ready to go in less than 20 minutes.
It looks real, though, doesn't it? I mean, I could see thinking that was real.
Yeah, especially because it's covered in dirt. Yeah. It kind of makes it look like it's brown fur. Yeah.
Totally.
So that might be one of my favorite stories of the day.
Huge thank you to Wes jumping in with a $5 super sticker. We got Wes, we got Pamela. You guys are good to us. Thank you so much. Appreciate your
Wes from Florida, Pamela from Santa Cruz.
Look at
both
that.
Excellent places to go to the beach.
Dirty dog. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You would think whoever called it in would have watched for a bit to see if it moved. Only the British.
Well, you know, the British dogs probably have the stiff upper lip, like their masters.
Can we talk about octopuses or octopi?
Octopi. Let's talk about octopi.
Thank you.
Because I'm hungry.
Oldest known animal sex chromosome evolved in octopuses 380
octopi.
Million years ago. The article says pusses.
Yeah, but we decided on octopi.
It sounds naughty, doesn't it, when I say it like that?
Yeah.
Octopuses. researchers have found the oldest known sex chromosome in animals, the octopus Z chromosome.
It now evolved... you're making it dirty.
Nah, that, yeah, see, it's how I do. It's how I roll. It evolved in an ancient ancestor of octopi about 380 million years ago. This finding answers, apparently, an age-old question about how sexual development is directed in the group of sea creatures that includes octopi and squid. The researchers say, we stumbled upon probably the oldest animal sex chromosome known to date. Sex determination in cephalopods, such as squids and octopi, was a mystery. We found the first evidence that genes are in any way actually involved. So that's kind of cool. The researchers reported sequencing cephalopod genomes for the first time, that of a male California two-spot octopus. In the latest study, they mapped the genome of a female California two-spot octopus, and they discovered 29 pairs of chromosomes and one single chromosome called chromosome 17. By contrast, the male octopus genome had two copies of chromosome 17, and the difference led the researchers to hypothesize chromosome 17 is a sex chromosome.
Trevor wants to clarify, did Kim just say octopussy?
I did say octopussy. Yes, I did.
Dieter pointing out that both octopuses and octopi are acceptable plurals for octopus. Yeah, we're just talking about preference. And in general, if you can pluralize a word with an I at the end, I think it sounds cool.
It does. I will give you that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah. Lastly, researchers looking at this Z chromosome failed to find a W chromosome in the female octopus, suggesting that the males have ZZ sex chromosomes, where the females are ZO, with the O noting the lack of a W. Anyway,
I thought the O meant something else.
Oh, no, it doesn't mean that, but we will talk about that a little bit later, trust me.
Okay. In the meantime, are you ready for a video?
Please take me out of my misery because I'm feeling a little weird today.
You know, I like to spend time editing a video if it's worth it. And in this case, it is worth it. A pair of police horses escaped. I know, Kim, yet another animal escape story. But a pair of police horses escaped from the stables in Cleveland and went for a run. Where do you think they went for a run?
Wild and free down the freeway.
There you go.
Thank you. Winner. Oh, yeah,
look
they did.
This. So this is the highway camera that they're actually able to move and track the
I was actually just guessing. Wow.
Yeah. This is the Cleveland Division of Police. They said their horses escaped from the mounted unit stables and made their way to Interstate 90. And the problem is this is downtown, right? So there's a lot of traffic. Yeah. The horses were rounded up by police and safely returned to their stables. The Ohio Department of Transportation posted this video to social media showing the horses holding up traffic while trotting in the wrong direction. Come on, horses. Some real horsepower on I-90 in downtown Cleveland today. Any injuries? Nay.
Those are police horses. That means they're officers of the law.
Yeah. So you know what? Maybe they had a tip. Maybe they were going rogue. Kind of like a police drama when the chief says, no, you can't go. You can't investigate. And the horses say, nay, we have a hot lead. Go. Yeah, I think this is really cute. And you can see here, then they take the off ramp and they cut across and they head out. And I just thought that was kind of cool.
Oh, that's really funny.
Luckily, everybody slowed down, so it wasn't. It was a little dangerous, but they slowed down, and everyone was considerate of the horses.
I mean, they slow down eventually, but at this point, they show no signs of slowing down.
No,
that's but at
least
crazy.
At least they're off the freeway, so safer for them.
Huge thank you to Gary D jumping in with a $9 super sticker or a $10 super sticker and a note for us. Great show, my friend. Thank you, Gary D, for your wonderful message and for your contribution to the show. We really appreciate it. Deidre says they didn't want to get caught. It's possible. That was a cool video, though. I think I would like to ask you if you could click like and subscribe, and if you could share the parts of the show that you like on Facebook to kind of help us keep growing the show, we would appreciate that.
And before we keep going, during the Mark Thompson show, I know a lot of people were watching and listening to the Mark Thompson show, obviously, because he's kind of a big deal. And you were talking about Prop 1, and today is the day that we vote. And Kim and I were talking about this off air, and I was talking about it with my mom when I help her like read through the voting information. Mm-hmm. And the question comes to Prop 1. Now, initially, she was going to vote for it because of the advertising. But the more I read about it, the more doubts I had. And my general philosophy with propositions are, if it's not clear, or if it's convoluted, or you're trying to do too much in one proposition, and I'm not okay with all of it, I vote no. My default is no. Like, you have to earn my yes vote. And right now, I haven't turned in my ballot yet, right? And I haven't filled it out. Right now, I'm leaning towards voting no, because it seems like an imperfect, not that everything has to be 100% perfect, but, you know, like, it doesn't seem like they did due diligence in making this clear, and I feel a little bit manipulated by the ads. Now, I just want to quickly read part of the rebuttal here. And this is from the CEO of Mental Health America of California, the executive director of California's Association of Mental Health peer-run organizations, and the executive director of Depression and Bipolar Support of California. They say, "We work directly with people struggling with mental health. We urge you to vote no because it will cause extreme damage to existing mental health care programs. Supporters don't tell you where Prop 1 gets its money to operate its programs, so we must. Prop 1 cuts existing county-level mental health services. It diverts one-third of existing funding from voter-approved Mental Health Services Act, that's the MHSA, allowing many kinds of services to compete with mental health care for the remaining money, and sticks the state in charge of the local programs and decisions." And they're saying this will be devastating at the local level. And the other thing that I was reading is that there's concern that the money will be taken from the smaller states, the smaller counties and the medium counties, and diverted to Los Angeles and perhaps San Francisco urban areas. Because politically, that would be more win for politicians. Now, that may sound cynical, but if the control is taken away from the counties and given to the state, we don't know what they're going to do. They're not telling us what they're going to do. They're not telling us, you know, how they're going to spend the money. And because of that, I can't vote for this proposition right now.
Unless
I'm convinced otherwise, I'm voting no. So I just wanted to mention that, because the diverting one third of money away from counties, you need to do a better job explaining that to me, especially when you have this nebulous argument that we're going to do good things and we're not going to tell you exactly what we're doing.
Lori, what do you think, Kim? I think on Prop 1,
yeah,
I think I'm still reading it. I'm still formulating my opinion. My ballot will be filled out later this afternoon. Right.
But that is a real concern. A third of the money being taken away from counties.
Yeah. No, and I think, and also, as Heather mentioned earlier, they don't really say exactly where the money is going.
Right, and that's the problem with these things.
So, yeah.
I think it's they're manipulating the public, because they know the public wants to solve this problem.
Yeah.
And if they want to work on a real bill, they can do it within the Assembly and the Senate of the state.
I guess I have to look into whether, if this doesn't pass, does that mean care courts won't move forward?
Because I don't think this is connected. This is mental health.
Yeah, I don't know
services.
Either. No, so I have some research to do still.
Yeah, but that's the other thing. If it's not clear, then I say I vote no. And you know what? Come back next election cycle with a better proposition.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to mention that today.
I wanted to throw this up there because Lori mentioned in the chat that our eagle friends who are sitting and waiting for their three eaglets to hatch at the nest had a great face picture. So you can see they've been turned around facing the water, but now they're looking at us. So I just thought I'd throw that out
there.
And
now they realize the paparazzi's here.
Now they're like, hello.
Yeah. On Prop 1, Heather saying Prop 1 also basically states, we don't have a plan for how the money will be used. We'll figure it out after it passes. And Mars saying they make it convoluted on purpose, knowing the public won't do enough research. It's horrible. That's the problem I have with the propositions, is if I feel like it's one of these feel good, who can vote against the police, right? Who can vote against firefighters? And you're not doing a good enough job explaining it. My default position is no.
Mama said, I also voted no. The language was too vague.
Right. But as a general philosophy, don't you think that's a reasonable philosophy to have? Like, if it feels like you're trying to pull one over on people and you're not doing a good job marketing it and explaining it, then I'm voting no. I think that's a reasonable position to take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let us move forward. Do you want to take a break before we jump into Travel Tuesday?
Yeah, why don't we do that? We'll take a break. We've had a lot of requests for Archie.
Okay.
And so we will play Archie and we'll come back.
Okay.
The After Party Live is underwritten by our audience, and without you, this show wouldn't be possible. For $1 a day, you could help feed a very moody 3-year-old cat with a taste for turkey and chicken. Every day across this world, cats go 30 minutes without food and don't know where to turn. Any dollar amount is appreciated and it all adds up. The PayPal link can be found in the About section of the YouTube channel or at the bottom of the show description. Thank you for your consideration.
Are you hungry? You want food?
A party where you don't even have to leave the house. You could be naked for all we care. The after party, live.
Naked? What? Great.
Shout out to Craig Bowers, our voiceover artist and former colleague at KGO. He did the open for us, and he does those rejoiners for us, and we appreciate him very much.
Tis time for Travel Tuesday.
Oh, but don't we want to thank our contributors?
Oh.
So let's thank... Let's thank Jim S., Kim N., and Lori F. That's Lori above the bar, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We want to thank our super stickers, Pamela, Kirby. We want to thank Wes T. We want to thank Gary D. And speaking of Lori F. Above the bar, she donated over $50, just over $50. So she and her bar, the Red Jack Saloon. And we have a photo of the Red Jack Saloon, right?
We do have the Red Jack, don't we? Here it is.
You found it. Red Jack Saloon. So this Travel Tuesday is sponsored by the Red Jack Saloon because we said if you contribute over $50 on PayPal, you will sponsor a segment. You will get a sponsorship. So this Travel Tuesday is sponsored by the Red Jack Saloon and Lori F. And if you want to check out the Red Jack Saloon, you can have a Kimikaze or the, what's Mark's drink called? The Martini.
Martini.
The bar is really nice. I went there with Mark, and then we took a driverless car from there back to his, I dropped him off at his hotel. That was kind of funny. It's between North Beach and Pier 39. It's like right
it's on
the
Bay,
edge of North Beach.
Right?
Yeah, it's on Bay. Yeah. So it's right on that dividing line between Pier 39 and North Beach area. 131 Bay Street near the corner of Bay and Stockton. And I recommend checking out the Kimikaze. That was my favorite. Sorry, Mark.
Was it? They also have the Maduro Mule. But definitely a friend of the show. We love the Red Jack.
I can't do the sugar. So for me, I can't do anything with the ginger beer.
All right.
Check it out. Red Jack and Saloon. Very cool. Thank you for
support,
Lori. Thank
you to the Red Jack Saloon and Lori Above the Bar for sponsoring Travel Tuesday.
Travel Tuesday. Thanks, Lori. Appreciate it. Didn't get some more bird seed. You know, I've been looking at the different bird seed because Target has like different kinds. And I want to get the like the big ones with the sunflower seeds. So thank you, Lori.
Travel Tuesday. Woohoo. All right. Let's talk about this hotel in Singapore. They will pay you if it rains during your vacation.
They can't do that here.
It rains an average of 171 days a year in Singapore, but there's a hotel. It's called the Lion Hotel, the Lion City, rather. They're taking a gamble to ensure that rain doesn't spoil your stay if you go there. The Intercontinental Singapore's Rain Resist Bliss Package will reimburse one night of a guest stay if one of their planned activities ends up getting rained out. Again, the hotel is the Intercontinental Singapore, all right? Somebody was chatting with a group of their friends about what's next in luxury travel, and one of them said, being able to guarantee good weather would be the next level of ultimate luxury travel. So the hotel's general manager heard this, and he said that is where the concept of a rain insurance package was born. There are some caveats to this, though. The Intercontinental isn't going to hand out cash every single time it rains. Oh, no. If the criteria is met that rain exceeds 120 cumulative minutes with any four-hour block of time during daylight hours, then they will give only to people staying in the applicable suites, which begin at $850 SGD, which is $633 a night for a junior suite, about $3,300 for the presidential suite, will give you a voucher which must be spent at the Intercontinental Singapore within 6 months. The amount you get, equivalent to one night stay in your room category. So if you stayed there a lot, it might be nice, but, you know, if you've already paid for your stay and they give you a voucher, meh, thanks anyway.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see that anywhere in San Francisco.
Mm-mm, no.
No fog on the Golden Gate Bridge guarantee, or lack of fog, rather. No. Speaking of places to go, a lot of people like to go on spring break, mostly the college co-eds, but, you know, some people are still experiencing a Peter Pan lifestyle.
Sure.
some of us. The U.S. has issued a travel warning for mega popular spring break tourist spots. The U.S. Embassy and consulates in Mexico have issued a travel warning ahead of the busy spring break tourist season. I'm hearing this from more and more people. It's just, you got to be very careful, people. Yeah. Especially, don't go to border towns, Mexico. Definitely do not go to the border towns. But you got to be very careful. There are a lot of shootings in Cancun where innocent people are getting caught in the crossfire, right? The message warns about a variety of safety threats in the country, especially threats from violent crime in popular destinations such as Cancun. There we go. Playa del Carmen. And Tulum. So mostly in that Cancun area is where I'm hearing about a lot of this. The State Department's travel advisories for Mexico currently range from do not travel for places such as Colima, Guerrero, and how do you say Michoacan?
Michoacan?
Somebody in the, Mama, yeah. Maybe. Help me out, Mama. exercising normal precautions from Campeche to Yucatan. So do your research. Quintana Roo, home to Cancun, Playa del Carmen, and Tulum, is under the exercise increased caution areas due to crime. Crime, including violent crime, can occur anywhere in Mexico, including popular tourist destinations. Travelers should maintain a high level of situational awareness, avoid areas where illicit activities occur, and promptly depart from potentially dangerous situations. So the other warnings covered included drug possession and use, even including medical marijuana in Mexico. It's illegal and can result in jail time. Alcohol, unregulated alcohol can be contaminated. I've heard of, I think it's true from bartending friends that a lot of times they put a chemical in the ice that makes you feel more drunk than you actually are, right?
So
they don't have to spend as much money on the real alcohol. And then pharmaceuticals, this is a real thing. There's counterfeit medications, even in, you see what looks like a CVS, you know, like right. It looks like a legit place and the pills aren't real. So keep that in mind. Sexual assault, drownings, medical emergencies, gun and ammunitions, all guns and even small amounts of ammunition are illegal in Mexico. So do your research. If you want to go to Mexico, just be careful and keep your wits about you.
Yikes.
It's Michoacan? Michoacan?
Michoacan?
How would you say that, Mama? Michoacan. Michoacan.
I would Americanize it and say Michoacan, but hey. That's just me.
Michoacan. Okay, close enough.
I found this on World Atlas. It's, and I don't know if we have a lot of, I figured it doesn't matter if we're Northern California or Southern California people.
Well, I lived in San Diego, so I consider myself a Californian.
Yeah.
We live on the West Coast. We're all the same people.
It's not that far of a drive. I found this article with 11 destinations for a 3-day weekend in Southern California. This is really pretty. I would love to go here. This is 28 Palms Ranch. It is in the vicinity of Joshua Tree National Park, about 4 miles from the Indian Cove entrance. You stay in a Mongolian-style yurt, blending nomadic living with modern comforts. They have areas for socializing, nightly bonfires, which encourage interaction among visitors. Within the national park's borders, I don't know if you've ever been to Skull Rock, but it's a natural granite formation shaped kind of like a human skull, kind of creepy.
Just for the person operating the slideshow, are we skipping over Palms Ranch? Because that's what we have here.
This is Palms Ranch.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. We're still here. Okay, and they have a lot of trails here. So that's 28 Palms Ranch. I'll move through them a little more quickly.
No,
Next is Big Bear Lake. This is another great place for a three-day weekend in Southern California. There it is. It is in the center of the San Bernardino National Forest. It's a mountain town that manages to escape the whole urban sprawl near it. It's a year-round destination for outdoor activities, clear blue water, pine forests all around, Big Bear Lake Village at the edge of the lake. They've got shops and eateries and stone accents and gabled roofs, and it's very beautiful. You can rent a pontoon boat, a fishing boat, or a kayak from Big Bear Marina to go check out the lake's coves. So that's fun. Ventura Harbor Village, along the Southern California in a seaside community full of sailboats and fishing vessels.
Sounds like River Islands.
Doesn't it? Ventura Harbor Village.
This is a little nicer than River Islands.
They have the Water's Edge restaurant and bar. Lots of fresh seafood out here. The Channel Islands and the National Park Visitor Center nearby as well. Next is Santa Barbara.
Can't go wrong with Santa Barbara.
No, you really can't go wrong with Santa Barbara. Apparently, and I did not know this, it's been called the American Riviera. We know it's between the Santa Inez.
Wait, who said that? Was that Oprah or Ellen?
It's World Atlas said it. That's what they said. Yeah. A lot of Spanish colonial revival architecture. They have beaches, a bustling harbor, Stearns Wharf, the oldest working wharf in California. The Queen of the Missions, Mission Santa Barbara, is here as well for those that want to go visit missions. And a botanical garden, 78-acre botanical garden dedicated to California's native plants. It's beautiful. Santa Barbara's beautiful. Next is La Jolla. Voted, as we've talked about in another Travel Tuesday, one of the best beaches in the world, right? It's right along the coast in San Diego, very affluent area. Architectural styles range from contemporary designs to Mediterranean-inspired homes. Mix of local businesses there, research institutions, educational schools like UC San Diego is in this area, seaside cliffs and beaches, and the La Jolla Cove.
You know what else is in that area, right?
Photographed beaches in Southern California.
You know what else is right by that area, right below UC San Diego?
No.
The largest nude beach in the United States.
Is it really?
Yeah, that's right. Oh.
Well, there's another reason to put it on your list. Interestingly, we talked about this town earlier on the Mark Thompson Show because of their elevation of the treatment of animals. This is Ojai. Ojai is in the Topatopa Mountains. Topatopa.
That sounds fake. That just sounds fake. It sounds like something out of Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory.
Topatopa Mountains?
The Topatopa Mountains.
Mm-mm. They've got citrus groves, olive oil production, very agricultural area. They have a thriving artist community. A lot of people healthy here, getting out and using the trails. They preserve their natural resources, implement policies that support sustainable living and environmental conservation. You've got the Ojai Valley Museum.
I want to hear more about the olive oil protection. Is that like Joe Box?
It is, actually.
Hey,
don't mess with it.
Don't mess with the olive oil.
I have never been to this next one, and I've always wanted to go. Catalina Island.
Yeah.
Have you been to Catalina?
No.
Beautiful. It's a rocky island off the coast of California in the Gulf of Santa Catalina, part of Los Angeles County, technically, 22 miles in length, 8 miles across at its widest point. It is a mix of rugged terrain, steep cliffs, and small beaches. It's got the Trans Catalina Trail, hiking trail. A lot of people love to go hiking out there. It has some great diving, a movie theater, a ballroom, a museum. So a lot of fun.
You know what else it has? Not to be the Debbie Downer today, but I can't help myself.
DDT and
hundreds,
barrels off the coast.
Barrels of DDT, which we broke on Mark's show. Mm. The fact that they were puncturing them. They found out the initial report was like, oh, these aren't just on the bottom. They actually punctured them to make them sink faster.
Can you believe that? And look how
beautiful
that area
is. And then you guys did a follow-up. There's more. It's not just DDT, right?
Mm-mm.
Other chemicals.
Yeah, it's really gross.
Gross.
What they did
we need
there.
To protect these places, so let's not do stuff like that.
Palm Springs is next in Riverside County within the Coachella Valley, which as I take a sip of my Coachella Valley tea, CoachellaValleyCoffee.com is the website. They've got a hot, dry climate. Palm Springs has more than 350 days of sunshine every year. They have some great hiking trails too. Beautiful views, lots of pools. The Palm Springs Aerial Tramway is the world's largest rotating tram car, so that's kind of fun. They have a living desert zoo and gardens, and they have a lot of great restaurants. Next is San Luis Obispo. It's funny because I've been to Cal Poly, but I haven't actually been to the beach at San Luis Obispo.
Oh, Morro Bay? You need to go to Morro Bay.
I've been to Morro Bay. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right by there.
Yeah, this is halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco. And a lot of college students here because of Cal Poly. A lot of retirees,
that makes sense,
interestingly, yeah.
Huge university town.
They have the Mission San Luis Obispo de Tolosa. founded in 1772. Lush gardens, lots of trails, Bubblegum Alley, which is a 70-foot-long alley covered with used bubblegum left by passersby. A lot of people like to go get their picture taken there. Next is Malibu. Ooh, I've never been here either. I should go.
Wait, what?
Malibu. I've never, been to the beach in Malibu. I mean, probably have driven by, but I've never actually stopped and, you know, walked down this beach.
Well, you know who used to have a home on the beach here?
Mark?
Mark Thompson.
I don't, was it oceanfront?
That's a good question. You'll have to ask him. I mean, it's Mark Thompson, so I presume so.
I'll have to ask him if his house was good
ask
enough to meet my standards.
Ask him about his Malibu beach pad.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is stretching for 21 miles along the Pacific Coast Highway. So beautiful. One of the most popular, expansive beaches is Zuma Beach, known for its long stretches of sand, really good surf conditions, and amenities for visitors, including they've got lifeguards, restrooms, and food stands. So
they have restrooms?
A lot of people love it there.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fancy.
They also have the Getty Villa, which is an educational center and museum. Oh, there you go.
Very cool. Those Gettys got around. They had the money
Death
to get around.
Death Valley. Ooh, the inn at Death Valley, known as Furnace Creek Inn, is a historic hotel situated at Death Valley National Park.
That's a great photo.
It really is. Guests can enjoy a range of facilities, including a dining room, spa, and a golf course. While you're there, you can go to Badwater Basin, which we talked about earlier. You can kayak in right now, right? You can't usually, but you can now. They have salt crystals covering the ground when it's not covered with water. So the eroded and colorful Badlands at Zabriskie Point, another attraction there. Kind of fun.
So I those recommend going when it's not crazy hot.
No.
I went January, February.
February.
And it was still
too
warm.
Too much?
Yeah, I would. I mean, if you don't like extreme heat, go there during the off season. I recommend that.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of extreme heat.
I am a fan of super stickers. Karen
Archie.
Cooper, $2.50 for Archie. Buy that cat a toy. Oh,
yay.
Archie has lots of toys. But yes, we'll get Archie another toy, and he will destroy it. Thank you very much,
that's so funny.
Karen, for that contribution. We appreciate it very much.
Let's go to JetBlue and Spirit, because I heard it's thumbs down for those two.
Yeah. Have you flown either of those airlines?
JetBlue, I have. Mm-hmm. Oh, and Spirit, I did once.
Oh, really?
I really like JetBlue. You know, they have
You've got
a little...
Spirit? Yes, you do. You've got Spirit? How about you?
How about you? Spirit Airlines was a little rinky-dink, I thought. And
yeah.
I was very...
That's kind of their specialty.
I was not feeling real confident when I was flying on a Spirit Airlines plane, I have to say.
But JetBlue?
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I liked it, too. Mm-hmm. I drove the plane. I flew back from New York once on JetBlue, and it was very nice. And they had the big basket of snacks. I don't know if they're still doing that.
Oh.
It was like it was displayed very well. Whoever's in charge of their marketing and their onboard food service
right.
got that down right. You know, pick whatever you want. JetBlue and Spirit have terminated their $3.8 billion merger agreement. Under the agreement, JetBlue will pay Spirit a $69 million termination fee. Oh, Spirit loves fees.
Oh,
and in
God.
This case, they're actually getting a fee. They're getting it back. JetBlue has already paid Spirit shareholders $425 million in prepayments for the planned acquisition, which was blocked by a federal court in January. The two airlines had appealed the ruling, and a circuit court hearing had been expected by June. But in statements Monday, both airlines said that while they still believe the merger would benefit consumers, bullshit, they do not believe they can receive regulatory approval prior to the termination date of their agreement on July 24th. The Justice Department sued to block the merger last year, arguing that Spirit's bargain-hunting customers would be harmed if the discount carrier were to be taken over by JetBlue. Since the court's January 16th decision in the government's favor, both airlines have sought to soothe investors by laying out standalone paths forward. The whole merger thing is to protect the companies so that they can compete with other companies. Kind of like T-Mobile. I was a big fan of T-Mobile. They're my provider. They argued that they needed to merge with Sprint. Well, guess what? Now my unlimited data is not really unlimited anymore. Now
they're telling me
if I go over a certain amount, they're going to throttle me. And instead of throttling down to 3G is gone. So I go from 4G all the way to what's called Edge, which is like things don't even load, right? Like at the end of the month, if I'm not careful, like if I stream too much of the Mark Thompson show and I'm not on Wi-Fi.
No.
All of a sudden, my phone's basically unusable for a day or two, and
well,
I have to be on
sucks.
Wi-Fi. Yeah, so these mergers, in general, they're there to benefit the corporations, right? They're to benefit the businesses so they can compete with the other larger businesses, right? Let's just be real about that. It's not for the consumers.
Yeah, I guess. What did they say no to JetBlue and Spirit? Because it won't foster competition?
Yeah, that was the original argument, was that it's going to harm the budget airline customers, which is true. It's true. They'll just raise the prices. So, speaking of having a lot of money and raising prices, someone's raising the price of real estate in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Mark Zuckerberg, you know, he's got this big chunk of land.
Look at that. This is the first time I've seen it outlined on a map.
And he is building a massive bunker. Weird, right? It's a $260 million bunker on this secluded Hawaiian island. What I don't understand is, I mean, does it not make you make him seem like Dr. Evil to have a bunker like that, a big bunker?
Yeah, what's the term for mainland people that go
Howley?
To Hawaii? Howley.
Yeah.
He's like does he want to be the ultimate Howley? Like how many burial sites do you think he's disturbed already?
No, I don't know about that. I just think it makes him seem like Dr. Evil. Who has a bunker like that? Anyway.
But think about it. Like when the Four Seasons built their resort in Maui, they built it over burial land. And then the way that they compromised was to create like a plot, like a little mini cemetery in the middle where they like kept the bones and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's complication to this, right? Because of the difference. Did you read about the part about the difference in how they used to transfer land?
It used to be fee simple. And it's changed. Used to be you could buy a house in Hawaii, but you couldn't buy the land, right? The land was owned by the native people, and they weren't going to transfer the land to you. So have they changed that?
I know that there's, because we went through it with my mom's or my grandma's property on the Big Island. There's two systems. There's the old system, which is a lot less formal, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't really mirror the mainland property system. And now they have the new system, and the problem is the two systems are clashing. So you imagine there are lots of claims where it used to be that if it was your ancestral homeland, they didn't have to like deed it to their descendants. So all these people, and I think in this case, they don't know how many people have claim to this land.
Right.
And I think it might be in the article.
Well, let's take a look at it. Yeah. Of course, we know Mark Zuckerberg with Meta owns Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp. He is not talking about the whole bunker and what he's doing there.
There's his Dr. Evil photo.
There it is. He's with his wife, Priscilla Chan. It appears he's been quietly, though, planning this retreat, this bunker, for at least 10 years. This is on the island of Kauai, which is the Garden Isle, right? A lot of movies filmed there.
Right.
Pirates of the Caribbean, Jurassic Park, all these things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's very green and lush and wild.
And I think you can't build anything over one story or two stories, something like that.
Maybe that's why he's going underground. I don't know. He said, we keep coming back with family and friends. Eventually decided to plant roots and join the community ourselves. We bought land. We're dedicated to preserving its natural beauty. It's filled with wildlife like pigs, turtles, rare birds, and seals, and local farmers use it to grow fruits and spices. I love talking to his daughter, Max, to explore and to see all the animals. So in 2014, he goes on this spending spree, snapping up all kinds of property here. And as you mentioned, there is a colonial past in Hawaii that makes makes home ownership and the history of it very complicated.
Yeah.
A large number of people could hold shares and portions of land within Zuckerberg's compound. Hawaiian law allows the transfer of ancestral land to descendants without formal deeds. So a large number of people could hold shares in portions of the land within the Zuckerberg compound. How weird is that?
Do you think they're going to get shares of Meta?
No, I don't think that. I don't think so. He might give them a few thousand to make them go away.
I think it's going to take more than a few thousand. If that was my ancestral land, I'd be like, pay up, buddy.
Bring it on. He's got 5.5 million square meters of land. He put up a 2-meter high wall with guards positioned along the perimeter and a security fence that does, and also a security force that conducts patrols on quad bikes.
Including snipers?
We don't know. Crazy.
Jeez. Heather's right. He's so creepy. It's like, even when he tries to be human, it's like, dude, you look like an alien trying to, you're acting like a human, like in your skin suit. It's so, he's
well,
so creepy.
Don't hold your breath then, John Daly, for an invitation, because out at the Zuckerberg compound, there are more than a dozen buildings with at least 30 bedrooms and 30 bathrooms in total. It's all centered
Why?
Around...
You're in
two,
Hawaii.
Because you want to bring all your people. And maybe even have an executive company retreat.
How many bathrooms did you say?
30 bedrooms and 30 bathrooms.
30 bathrooms?
Yeah. One for everybody there.
Bathrooms. You don't need 30 bathrooms.
If everyone needs to pee at the same time, you know
have
how
one
it
large
is.
Bathroom.
Yeah. It's all centered around two mansions with a total floor area compatible to a professional football field. There are multiple elevators, offices, conference rooms. See what I mean about the company getaway? An industrial-sized kitchen. They've got 11 disc-shaped tree houses in the nearby wooded area are planned. Intricate rope bridges allowing visitors to cross from one building to the next while staying in the treetops. They don't have that yet. They're still building it, all right? On the other side, you've got a full-size gym, pool, sauna, hot tub, cold plunge, tennis court, lots of guest houses and operational buildings. But they say the most eyebrow-raising of features has to do with this tunnel that branches off into a 5,000-square-foot underground shelter with a living space, a mechanical room, an escape hatch that can be accessed via ladder. The incredible size of this bunker, which has a blast-proof door, is double that of the typical home, right? Yeah. It will be entirely self-sustainable, producing its own food and water. And
you mean
when,
if you have a staff?
When it's all finished, that's right.
Yeah, I don't think it's not making the food on its own.
Zuckerberg's Hawaiian estate will rank as one of the most expensive private properties in the world.
Mm-hmm. It's not that it's just gross. It's gross, and it's in Hawaii, where I feel like we owe the Hawaiian people respect.
We do.
Especially given the colonial past. And I think he's just tone deaf to all that. And I think it's gross. It's a gross display of wealth. William making a good, asking a good question. How often does Zuck molt? That is a very good question.
Well,
Harry
you
Magnin.
Guys... oh,
Zuck's $5
sucks.
Super sticker. $5 super sticker. Thank you, Harry.
Nicely done, Harry. We will never truly know what's going on behind the security gates and the patrols because everyone who enters this property has to sign an NDA, a very strict non-disclosure agreement. And the workers there are sworn to secrecy as well. It's all very hush-hush. Mm-hmm. It's Fight Club, said one person, a contractor. We don't talk about Fight Club.
Yeah, Deidre agreeing Native Hawaiians were so badly mistreated. John Watson asking only room for two people. Here's the thing. You say self-sustaining. For how long? Everything in Hawaii has to be imported. So how long are they, were they going to just have MREs?
I don't know. They must have food on the property.
And then when they
maybe,
run out?
Because remember...
Does he know how to fish? Or the fish will be dead, too.
Well, he's a sportsman, that guy. But we reported here on the show that on this property, remember, he's going to be... was it some kind of beer made from macadamia nuts or something? Right?
Was it beer? I remember the cows being fed macadamia nuts.
Oh, that's right. Beef. It's beef. The beef were being fed macadamia nuts, so there could be like this Wagyu Kobe type, like even more fancy beef than that. So he's got animals, he's got trees, he's got maybe a way to, I don't know, filter water, something.
Yeah, but
even
if there's like an apocalypse,
has to be shipped in.
Yeah, yeah. Dieter's saying even the jet fuel has to be shipped in. But if there's an apocalypse, like how long are you going to hold out? Like, what are you preparing for? And if you're preparing for something so bad, like if it's that bad, the environment's probably not going to be beneficial to you in terms of production of food. Did we talk about Mark Benioff? And there's this article being that was published about Mark Benioff and Salesforce and how he's buying up land on the Big Island. Have we talked about that?
No.
I'm going to throw that in for tomorrow.
Yeah.
So there's, I believe this this journalist probably believes that he's doing what Zuck is doing. And Benioff is saying, no, I'm not doing that. But he's buying up hundreds and hundreds of properties all over the Big Island around his existing property. And the locals are getting nervous. So I'm going to find that article and we can talk about that tomorrow. Because it looks like this is the trendy thing to do now.
What, if you're a billionaire, snap up land in Hawaii?
Snap up Hawaii. Yeah. Not cool. And here's another photo.
Did you ever see that George Clooney movie about Hawaii? I think it was Descendants. Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Kind of reminds me of this.
Look at this dork. He can't, he's such a dork.
Well, I mean, I can't fault him for loving Hawaii because I do too.
Look, why is this appropriate for Hawaii? Like that. If you're going to Hawaii, appreciate the culture. Don't bring your culture and just impose it, Mr. Rich White Guy. Sorry.
Well, I guess if you're Mark Zuckerberg, you have to. I mean, I'll try to defend him, even though I don't know if I can. You're this type of billionaire.
You don't have to defend everybody.
You have to have security because people could kidnap your kids, right?
You don't have to do it in Hawaii.
You have this many billions of dollars.
If you want a bunker, put it in Wyoming, put it in Montana, something like that. Not someplace that I guess we took that land away.
Well, here's the question. What does he know that we don't know? Like, what's going to happen? Like, why do we need a bunker?
He's probably just hedging his bets.
I don't know.
Or he is an alien and he's like, this is where I have to be when it all goes down.
And I can't imagine that you're always in Hawaii. So what if you're in the Silicon Valley when the big one hits or whatever and you need your bunker, but it's far away?
Well, you jet off very quickly.
Then you get in your helicopter or your super yacht and jet over there?
Yeah. Well, helicopter's not going to get you there, but you're
Well, you take the chopper to the super yacht and then...
Well,
yeah.
Probably want to take a jet. Speaking of jets and money and rich white guys, right-wing Catholic site church. This is the Catholic site church militant to close after settling defamation suit. So this media outlet is called Church Militant. It's a weird name.
Oh.
It's a right-wing Catholic site.
That doesn't seem very Christian.
It's called Church Militant. It is shutting down in April after settling a defamation suit filed by a canon lawyer and priest with an apology and $500,000 payment. The impending closure announced by the law firm that represented the priest comes just 4 months after the Church Militant founder Michael Voris was ousted for breaking its, quote, morality code, reportedly by sending out, ready for it? Shirtless pictures of himself.
Oh, not a Church Militant.
No, Voris launched Church Militant called Real Catholic TV, as opposed to fake Catholic TV, until the Catholic Church objected, and in 2006 to address what he called serious erosion of the faith and pushback at any hints of progressive movement. It was sued by the Reverend Georges de Loire of the Diocese of Manchester, New Hampshire, who was smeared as unstable and vindictive in an article after he decreed that St. Benedict Center, or an organization labeled a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, could not represent itself as a Catholic institution. The article was anonymously written, but the author was later revealed to be canon lawyer Mark Balastrieri, who was representing St. Benedict Center, according to the Religion News Service. Church Militant said on its site last week that Balastrieri led it and St. Michael's Media, which operates the network, to believe that the claims in his article were supported by anonymous sources known to him. This group and Church Militant regret that the article was not properly vetted. It was later revealed that Mr. Balastrieri could not substantiate his claims regarding this father with any credible sources. Further, Mr. Balastrieri did not disclose to this group that his active involvement in a dispute in which he was representing a client and Father De Lair was representing the church at the time. Sorry, this is getting a little convoluted. But months before the resolution of the lawsuit, it was turbulent ones for the Church Militant. Beset by financial troubles, it laid off all 19 of its employees, scraped its nightly news show in May, and then Voris was forced out in November after he sent out shirtless photos. Catholic Church, like, get your blank together.
Those shirtless photos will do it to you every time, you know?
Yeah, the Church Militant had to sell off the real estate, showed up to a lawsuit in December. He did not have an attorney. The one retained by the board had recused himself because he was considering legal action against this guy. Catholic Church, like, come on. Crazy, right?
Don't get me started. I'm telling you. If you're looking for information about the vote today,
yeah,
I have found it very valuable to go to abc7news.com, the San Francisco news affiliate. They have live Super Tuesday results. They have a whole article, what you need to know about Prop 1 for the California primary election. And they have a bunch of links to key races, to polls to Super Tuesday live updates and everything else. So it's one of my favorite sites on an election day to check out. Of course, CNN as well will be looking at national races. So that's another one. But abc7news.com is probably my favorite Bay Area site to go look for election
coverage. And then the official website for the state, I'll just put it up on the screen.
It's sec.ca.gov.
It's the Secretary of State, sos.ca.gov. Yeah. So all the official, everything official is there, all the voter information for the state. If you want to look up stuff directly, sos.ca.gov.
All
right. Do you have one more story for us?
I don't know. Do we have time for it?
We always have time for one more story.
Okay. What do we have? What do you want to talk about?
Oh, you want me to choose?
Sure.
Orcas.
Oh, the orcas.
Oh, no.
Oh.
The O. Interesting things that can happen during an O.
Oh, I did say this.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the O. And when I say the O, I think you know what I mean.
Can't believe I suggested orcas when we had this.
I know. Don't say that. We're going to get demonetized. All right. I saw this story and I thought, we need to talk about this. 6 surprising things that can happen when you have the big O. This is a story I saw on Huffington Post. All right.
HuffPo.
Did you know that when you have the burst of pleasure, you can have immediately a splitting headache?
There's like, so many drops. We're going to get so many drops out of this if we want.
A big headache. It's even more common in men, and especially common in people that suffer from migraines. Most of the headaches last for a few minutes, but it can last as long as a few hours or even a couple days, making you wonder, is the big O actually worth it? I don't know. Number 2, you might cry. And they say, listen, this is normal. A lot of times they don't know exactly why it happens. The psychological and physiological changes that happen during the big moment, but it happens to a lot of people. It's called postcoital dysphoria. A fair number of people report feeling sad, overwhelmed, tearful, emotional after the big O. You might feel, and this is, obvious, totally euphoric, right? For some people, euphoric feelings are extra intense. Their mood is improved. They feel more positive. Their self-esteem is elevated. Here's what I didn't know. When you have the big O, you might sneeze. I don't think that's ever happened to me before, but they don't know exactly why sneezing and the big O are linked for some people, but they think maybe it's crossed wires in the autonomic nervous system responsible for reflexes like sneezing.
Maybe
as
you're
well
allergic
as
to your partner.
Arousal. That's kind of what I was thinking.
Maybe your body's saying bad idea.
Don't do it. This is also a given. You might have shaky legs. Duh. 6, you might feel as if you're coming down with the flu.
Kim says with authority.
Did you know this? It's called post-orgasmic illness syndrome, POIS.
What? Come
it's
on.
It's a rare condition which men experience flu-like symptoms, a fever, fatigue, nasal congestion after they, you know what I'm saying?
So they instead think, of long COVID, this is like long O? Although
I guess
long
so.
Long O would be a good thing.
It might be related to an autoimmune disorder or an allergy to semen, according to the Genetic and Rare Diseases Information Center.
Maybe your body's saying no.
I don't know. But those are the 6 surprising things that can happen when you have the big O. You're welcome, everybody.
I think they're just allergic to children. I think that's what's going on. Oh, I get it. Oh.
Oh my. I don't know what you just said.
We have people to thank, super sticker wise. Who's this?
Pamela. Woohoo. Thank you so much, Pamela. Thank you so much, Wes. Have a good afternoon in Florida. Gary D. Great show and thank you. Karen Cooper, Archie by that catatoy. Thank you for that. And Harry, that Zucks. Very funny. Thank you
and
so much.
And we have regular contributors. Those were Jim S., Kim N., and Lori F. And thank you, Lori F., for your contribution sponsoring Travel Tuesday. Lori above the bar at the Red Jack Saloon there at between North Beach and Pier 39 on Bay, 131 Bay Street.
Absolutely. If you're in the city, check it out. It's the Red Jack.
Get yourself
thank
a Kimikaze.
You. Go vote. Have a great afternoon. And we'll see you right back here tomorrow for the After Party Live. Bye-bye, you guys. Bye, John Daly.